It's Primus Drax with Josh, Frankie, and Sawyer.
What a couple of dumb shits.
Hello, Primates. You found Primus Drax. Congratulations. You can find us at Primus Drax Pod on Instagram, Twitter. We also have a Facebook page named Primus Drax, appropriately.
And follow you can email our Facebook page, guys. It keeps growing. We keep posting stuff. We want to read your comments. We want to know what you got to say. And remember, Primus Drax on Instagram and Primus Drax on Facebook have completely different content. So if you follow Primus Drax on Facebook and you check the comments, every now and then you will discover something amazing about Sawyer.
That voice you just heard that came out of nowhere is... actually, it came out of the darkness in Mexico City, if what I'm seeing is right on Zoom. It's Frankie!
Hi, Josh.
Hey, hey. And joining us from an undisclosed generic hotel room, he's somewhere on tour. It's Tim Sawyer.
Guys, sorry I missed last week. I was detained by the boys in Primus. I couldn't make it, man.
It's all good. Herb called and excused your absence.
Yes. The best was that Josh... when you texted me and saying we're on, and I said, dude, I'm standing here with Tim, we're doing rehearsals. And you said, the only legitimate excuse that's passable to get out of a Primus Drax taping is you're in rehearsals with Primus.
That's right. That's it. So
it's true. It wasn't, my mom didn't write the note, dude. I wrote the note.
That's,
you know, Tim signed it and I handed it to you.
That was not forged. No, that was a good one. So don't abuse it, but use it when you can, right? So you are actually on tour with Primus right now. So how's it going? We're only a few days as of this recording. Yeah. We're only a couple gigs into it.
Yes, I am on tour with Primus right now. We've done two shows of a Tribute to Kings tour. All I can give you as what to expect is holy motherfucking shit. It's fucking badass.
And your role on the tour, it sounds like, is hype man. So you run out before Primus takes the stage. And
right.
Tell people they're about to shit their pants.
I do. Okay, left side, ho! Right side, yo! Okay, right side, left side, yeah. Here comes Primus, say ho! Yep, no, come on.
Wall of Death! Oh, that's Exodus, no. Sorry. Yeah,
there was
so
a mosh pit the first night, actually, that you said Wall of Death. There actually was a mosh pit going on for the opening set. It was awesome.
Ah, that's excellent. Crazy. And
but,
your role?
You know, I want to say real quick, you know, for everyone to hear, this is the first live shows that I've done since March of last year when the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And, you know, Primus have not played live in front of people since the Slayer tour, which was November of 2019, right?
Right.
So every time you get to the show and your favorite band's playing and you want to see them and you're excited, you know, it is one thing and you're happy when they walk out, whatever. But there was some magic in the air when the dudes walked out for the opening set, and you could just see the joy in people's faces and the smiles, and just it was like level 10 of like, oh my God, here we go. You know, Primus are standing there and we're at a show and they're going to play. You know, I felt it, you know, it was like this level of energy of like it's back, you know?
Yes.
It was trippy. It was really cool.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, really, really cool.
And just to make sure everybody knows, your role on this tour is drum tech, correct?
That's right. I set up Tim's drums and tear them down and drink beer.
So given how big that kit is, especially for the Rush set, how long does it take to disassemble that thing, man?
Usually like 18 hours.
Yeah, that sounds right. You're the last one on the bus.
It's just a drum kit, man. I'd set it up and take it down. I don't know. There's no extra amount of time it takes. There's just a lot of stuff. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure you'll set a company record real soon here on the first leg of the tour.
Well, you know, the Wonka tour took the prize, man, for the biggest amount of stuff I've ever set up and torn down.
Right
and
on.
We started the Wonka tour. As you know, you guys saw the show. Primus opened up for the Wonka show. Remember?
Yep.
And in the beginning, I had a separate drum set. The white drums that Tim used to play was the opening kit.
Yeah.
And then I'd have to quickly put that away and then, you know, get the other Wonka kit together. And then we had Tim's kit was behind the Wonka kit all in one big circle.
Yeah.
And it became so much doing three drum sets and doing the filming in the daytime for the screen footage, you know, in the Oompa costume, I ended up just taking Tim's drums out of the Wonka kit and putting those forward. They'd play on the Wonka brown kit, and then when the curtain went down, I'd have the locals help me just drag it back into place, you know, grab everything real quick and move it. Was like cut off eons of time to get everything ready again, you know, then tearing a white kit down and all that. But
right on.
But this kit is not that big of a deal. I mean, it's really not that. It's not any bigger than Tim's kit ever is. You know, there's some extra bells and whistles or whatever. That's it, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's a great time to be a Primus fan. They're back on tour. They're playing a Rush record, for crying out loud. You're listening to Primus Tracks, and today we're talking about the final track of the Brown album. So this is a big episode. We're wrapping up the Brown album, 1997's masterpiece, for lack of a better term, some would call it. And wow, we're closing shop with Arnie, which some would describe as a throwaway track to end the album. But for a guy like me, it's a pretty cool album closer. Frankie, before we really get into the track, is there a live history for this one?
Sort of, Josh. It has been teased twice in the middle of Southbound Pachyderm during November of 1997. Two shows which were pretty close to each other. So you can tell that in early November, for one reason or another, Arnie was in Les Claypool's mind. So yeah, it was teased during Pachyderm. That's it.
A truncated live history. That's it.
Only second to Space Farm, I guess, right?
That's right. Arnie and Space Farm are two elusive tracks that we need to get out there. So I'll try to bend Lur's ear on that sometime. Speaking of Lur, actually, I kind of skipped over Miscellaneous Debris. If you haven't seen it yet, folks, go to YouTube and please type in the search bar Lur Riff Lords. And the first result should be the Gibson Guitars YouTube channel with their show called Riff Lords, and you will have 45 minutes of just Larry Lalonde
46
modeling
with 30 seconds.
Okay, 46 minutes and 30 seconds. Frankie hates rounding. He's such a literal guy. But we shouldn't sell Lur short. That's right. If it's 46 minutes and 34 seconds of Lur, that's better than 45 minutes of Lur. But you're going to get 46 and a half minutes, roughly, of Larry Lalonde modeling guitar riffs, playing them at half speed and showing you how to play them and giving some background and a little bit of theory behind a few of them. It is a great watch. So please go find that and get that view count way up for Gibson.
I'm not going to lie, Josh. It took me about an hour and a half to watch the video because I kept going back to see Lur play again.
Oh, yeah. Because you never get to see his fingers, you know, hitting the fretboard on any video footage, because they always cut away from him too quickly, or the focus is always on Les. And then at the live shows, we know about the lighting situation. This is one of the best opportunities anybody's ever had to see the man himself play those
riffs. I
cannot
wait to watch this. This is the kind of stuff I like to watch.
Yeah. Oh, it's the master class. You're going to laugh your ass off.
Exactly, yeah.
You're going to love it. Go find Lur on Riff Lords. Arnie, track 15, Brown Album, closing up shop.
There's something curious about this track, Josh. You know, Brown Album sort of broke some traditions on previous Primus records because we got accustomed to the first and the last track being connected to each other somewhat.
Right.
And then the Brown Album sort of ended that. But at the same time, it's worthwhile pointing out that in the first song, we have a character who is addressing a crowd. And in the last song, we have exactly the same thing. So more or less, we could say that they are kind of connected.
Right. There is a thematic connection. That's something I never thought about. So we don't get a reprise in the traditional sense, but we do get a thematic one, or just some kind of a bit of one, at least a tangential connection between the opening and closing tracks.
I'm going to agree. I think, Frankie, you're on to the fact that it's that deep, dark Les knows what he's doing thing I've talked about many times. Like, I wouldn't have put that together, but when you really dissect it like you have, it does have that same beginning and ending connection, you know?
And that's not something I'd considered, Frankie, although that pattern of having that looping idea around it. And even the Desaturating 7 has that. If you put that thing on repeat,
right,
it's almost seamless when it goes from track 7 back to track 1. It's pretty incredible. But the that idea, Les likes to do that. He likes to have these circular type albums. And this one at least holds together in that regard with somebody addressing a public audience. I'm going to play the intro because, first of all, we have Les saying, "Go ahead, Fishbait," which is a great nickname for Brain. One I'd never or hadn't heard, of course, because Brain was new. But do you remember that one, Soya?
Yeah, Fishbait. No, you know, I don't know what that is. No idea.
He just went by Brain, right? He's just Brain.
Yeah, I mean, Les always tries to have nicknames for everybody. Not tries to, but gives everybody nicknames. But I don't recall that ever being Brain's nickname. Huh. Is that what you're asking me?
Well, yeah, at the outset of this track, we have Les saying, "Go ahead, Fishbait," and then Brain gives us that nice drum roll to lead into the track. So
that was random.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
Brain has never been called Fishbait other than in that moment.
Gotcha. Well, I want to play the intro because it is Brain, I think, being Brain, and he gives us a pretty fat beat that Les and Larry get to build on. And I do want to talk about this drum.
The thing I want to say before you start it is this is obviously the one microphone in the pool table room.
Yes, absolutely. That kick drum, once you told us about that, and then with Rest and Bones having to get that second mic in there, otherwise that kick drum would have blown everything out of the water. You hear that in this one big time. But I think it works here. So let's hear the intro at least.
Go ahead, Fishbait.
Oh yeah, that kick drum's clipping like mad.
What an intro.
You know, it sounds like it could go into Tommy the Cat at any moment.
It really does, those drum rolls at the start.
That's what my brain was thinking as I listened to this again. I was like, wait, what are they doing? Right, this song. Okay.
And you, when we were talking about it before we hit record, you said you didn't have much of a memory of this track.
I do not, man. You know, this is one of those things that just came together at the end of the session, you know, or was put together. It's obviously not a single. There was no plans to do a video for this one. So,
yeah,
it's just one of those things that they never played it live. It wasn't around anymore. So I forgot all about this song.
I do wonder if it was near the end of the production cycle for the album, because it does have that air of finality to it, because it, you know, to me, it does create, interestingly, even with that big drum beat and that big drum intro and the abrasive production that we've talked about for 15 tracks now, this track actually creates a dreamlike atmosphere to me when you put all the instrumentation together. It's almost like a floating or a weightlessness for me.
I mean, it's definitely a departure from what the rest of the record does.
Yeah.
You know, the thing to be aware of is that, you know, there wasn't just a bunch of stuff laying around recorded that they created this with, you know. Whatever was recorded became a song, and it was used and it was made, and there's no any leftovers, you know, that are sitting around that, like, right, in 10 years later they can grab, oh yeah, remember that one song we never finished, let's make that a song to re-release on the anniversary record or something.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So at the same time, at the same token, you know, they just did a jam, you know, and obviously they never got a song out of it, and they just kind of made this happen out of it, you know, which is cool. I mean, it's a cool departure from forcing songs out of two parts every time, you know, or two or three parts, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. This one is an A part that it stays an A part the entire time, but it works, I think, because of the groove and the atmosphere that they're creating with it. And I can't imagine that there was much debate over what would be the closing track listening to them all, because this one has that air to it.
I mean, I like it. Listening to it, it's like, okay, it's not that Brown album over and over again, song after song. You know, like, it really took it somewhere else. It's like, okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the floaty weirdness of what Lur's doing, and the spacey vocals is cool, man.
Yeah. Right on. Yes, the weirdness of Lur, he's, because that's kind of giving it that floating feeling. But then less with the trolling, those, you know, those open notes on the low string there, like he does in Southbound Pachyderm, which is why they work together well in a live setting. Him doing that, it's like that trolling motor when you're out there on the lake and you just want to move a little bit. So you turn on the trolling motor and just.
Right.
So to me, this track too, and Frankie, I'm curious about your thoughts on this, because you're a big movie guy, more so than me. But I feel like you could have this track under the closing credits of a film, right?
Or definitely,
you know, just, you know, directed by, cinematography by, produced by, you know, you could have this one because it has that air to it for me. But and maybe I'll try it at the end of the episode. I'll do a roll of credits at the end of this episode for the first time, and Soya will be everything. Executive producer.
Yeah. Awesome.
Line producer.
We'll get the pizzas.
Pizza line. Sound engineer. Gaffer. But yeah, even though it's all A, it just has that atmosphere. And that, like I said, that works because there are a lot of songs, you know, at the end of the record, it's just like, it's okay. You know, it's basically an outro, but it's an extended outro. And it's just that nice, smooth groove to it in contrast to what we've heard throughout much of the record. This, you know, this isn't Pudentane where it's bum, 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 bum. It's
right. To me, listening to this song, I'm going to have to be honest. It's unfortunate that we track the drums out in the pool table room with one or two mics, because it's got a very dub sounding kind of feel to it, you know?
Yeah.
Like atmospheric dub. And if Brain was on a tighter room kit, it might be something spectacular in that sense. But it's just so like the Brown Album did what it did, and then that's the way to go out kind of thing. And I was like, I'm not dissing it. I'm just saying that it's cool. It could have been a lot better and more if they would have not utilized that big giant room with the one mic kind of vibe, you know, on this kind of a tone.
Well, I'm curious from an end user perspective. Now, I've only listened to this album, the vinyl version, the original vinyl release. I've only listened to it on a record player through an analog system once, and that was 20 odd years ago, and I don't remember what it sounded like, but I do wonder if it would sound less or more along the lines of what you're talking about through an analog system. And I don't know if you've ever listened to it through that, even though you listened to it when they were recording it on analog gear, so I'm sure it's different that way too.
I don't know, man. I don't think that that's going to change the tonality of how you experience it, you know? I'm just saying, like, if Brain was on a drum kit in a studio tight and you were actually tracking it normally in a studio.
Oh, gotcha.
Not like at Rancho Relaxa, how we did things organically, you know? I mean, Brain sounds like he's next door, you know, when you hear the drums come in. It's like there's a mic out, like, outside the room pointed at him, you know?
Yeah, it's like when your neighbor's practicing. Yeah.
Which is basically how we recorded those tracks, you know, like out in the pool table room. But I just think that, you know, the song is cool, but damn it. I always say that about all these Brown Album songs. Damn it. And as far out as things got, you know, you could always say any song could be something that it wasn't, you know. You could say that Let's Dance is a Bowie record that is too pop. You know, it could have been more punk rock like the old days, you know? Yeah. that's the vibe that they went for, you know? Frankie, I'm joking, of course, but you understand what I'm saying. Like, as far as like the spectrum of bands putting stuff out, there's certain moments where you go, God, why did they do it like that? Why couldn't it have been like how it was on the other one, you know? So to me, this departure at the end is really cool, but I wish Brain would have been in the other room to tighten it up just a hair bit more, you know?
Mm-hmm. It does. Yeah. Maybe that would enhance the tripped out vibe of it that we really get. And I do wonder, I mean, these guys are all big Pink Floyd fans. So to me, it does have a Floyd tinge to it. I don't think it's 100%, but.
Totally. I totally got that. I mean, some of the noting in there was that crossed my mind to a Pink Floyd song. There's something that's about what Les is playing. It's the same note structure of In the Flesh or something. I can't put my finger on what song it is. I'm paralleling it to, you know what I mean?
I'm at a loss too. I can't name a specific track, but there's certainly that vibe to it with the melodic line that he's playing for sure.
The thing about it is we weren't able to just put it on your laptop and go mix it with Logic and all these samples and just move stuff around within the song. You know, like it is what was recorded and that's it, you know, and all the delays and reverbs and weird stuff was, we could just add that on top of it. There was no like grabbing a section and looping it. You know, there was none of that available at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, at Rancho Relaxo, at least, you know, I mean, of course you could have done it, but we didn't do that, you know?
I think what this track could use is the Gonculator too, or whatever that pedal it is that Lur has. That's so awesome on the South Park track. Is that what it's called, Frankie? The Gonculator? Gonculator? I
can't remember. I'm going to tell you right now, whatever he used on the South Park one, it's not around anymore because Lur has about 8,000 stomp boxes since that moment.
Yeah. Oh, he used a specific one on the Gibson thing, but maybe it's not the same one.
I'm just saying it's like, you know, Lur will take anything and play anything and try everything and move it around and change it and turn the knobs. It's never the same thing.
Well, as far as Arnie goes, you know, we have this nice instrumentation and it's really groovy and it just kind of flows. And that's, I think, the purpose. But then things drop out and we get into this unique vocal delivery. And it does come right back around to that first track of the album, Frankie. We have this spoken word delivery again of this guy giving an address.
Oh, that's what I wanted to point out, you know, the connection to the first track. And, you know, we were not there. Well, Soya was there, Les doesn't let him listen to the lyrics when they're being recorded. But, you know, reading those lyrics on paper and then listening to his delivery on the track, I don't know why, but it makes me wonder if it was all ad-lib, you know, if he just went along with a stream of consciousness as he was recording.
Right.
Because it doesn't, they don't sound like something that he sat down, you know, to write with a lot of thought.
That's a good point, Frankie. And I actually, that exact frame of thought crossed my mind listening to this again today, that he just was kind of in there at like going forward freestyle, you know?
Hmm. Interesting.
With an idea and then just kind of freestyle what he's actually said.
Yeah. The vocals are strangely rushed in this because he's talking, he's speaking, but he's speaking quickly. The man, he stepped up to the microphone and he gave it a kiss. You know, he's kind of rushing through it in that dead voice narration as opposed to actually delivering lyrics. And it's all prose. There's no rhyme scheme or anything. So it seems like it's of secondary importance to what's going on around it. I don't know. That's interesting that the vocals aren't as important as the music this time, but he's definitely having fun from a technical perspective, because when you listen to those vocals, especially the what he does on God Bless You One and All and Remember This Day, which, by the way, Frankie, I'm sure you noticed are the only things the speaker actually says into the microphone. Those are the ones that get that treatment where Les is doing all that panning and speeding it up and slowing it down and messing with the knobs. In the background there. So you're getting a lot of, God bless you one and all, you know, in the background and that sort of thing. So he's playing around a lot with it. But yeah, these lyrics themselves, to me, it's a very nice piece of microfiction. Arnie, the lyrics to Arnie are only 87 words long. And if you want to get technical, microfiction is usually 100 words or less, and you can tell a complete story in that many words. And he certainly does here. He's got elements of story for this one. It's really interesting. And like most effective fiction, Frankie, it leaves the reader asking questions. And I know you probably have a million of them.
So, Josh, could we compare microfiction with lyrics where the songwriter is inventing a particular world within the track?
Why not? The key word's fiction.
like an inception of sorts, right?
Sure. Why not? Let's take it there. Let's really trip ourselves out on this one, man. You know, I recently read a comic book where the artist creating the comic book is in the comic book, right? There's that kind of stuff happens all the time. There's a really, if you're into theater, there's a famous play from many, many years ago called Six Characters in Search of an Author by Pirandello, in which there's the whole play is about six characters going, we need somebody to write for us. And it's one of those meta things. So, yeah, you could certainly – that's not microfiction, but there's certainly – you could work that in if you wanted to make that your thesis, Frankie.
The same thing happens on Heroes, Josh. Bowie talks about bands which don't actually exist, and he mentions specific records from those bands, and he even recommends films which don't exist either.
You knew that, right, Soya?
No idea what you guys are talking about.
We're losing Soya.
Oh, jeez.
No, no, no. I will tell you, what about in A Farewell to Kings song, the song A Farewell to Kings ends with Geddy saying, "It brings us all closer to the heart."
Yes.
And then there's a song called Closer to the Heart, which is a big hit of theirs. You know?
Right.
And it's on the same record.
Yeah. Right. So that, there's that that thematic thing. He's tying things in and he's doing that meta thing. Because
paying attention. Come on now. Come on. Man.
You're on it, Soya. Right on. And you stayed on topic.
Your brainiacs talk down just sitting there.
You've got some stuff working away up there. I see the gears turning while you're drinking that beer. So I have a couple questions about this one, Frankie, and Soya too. I'm curious what your thoughts are on this, because when I read these lyrics and hear the delivery, this guy who is unnamed, although the track is named Arnie, so we can conclude the guy's name is Arnie, lights himself on fire in front of an audience. Okay. So I'm thinking, is this a cautionary tale about celebrity, or this is what's required to stay in the limelight? There's a Rush reference for you. Or is it just Les was doing stream of consciousness and like, yeah, this guy's going to light his head on fire. It's going to be funny. But it's interesting.
The lyrics definitely mean nothing. I think it's just a collection of stuff, of goofball jokes that was going on at the time. And Les kind of threw it all into the pot and made it up on the fly, you know, like freestyling some funny stuff as an outro to the record, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Right on.
And it all tied together with the lyrics, Frankie, like you said. You know, like it all kind of comes back to the beginning. You know?
Frankie, you solved another Primus mystery.
Thanks.
He's sitting there in the dark. Congratulations, by the way.
Josh, can you sample some textures? Can we hear some Lure and some Less?
Hell yeah, man. Let's hear some of it. You got a timestamp for me?
The part with the most textures.
That does not narrow it down for me, dude. after the vocals, after the narration there?
Any part where Lure is doing the cool thing with the guitar, you know, like...
Doing the cool thing.
Wow, wow.
Sure. Let's hear a little bit more. Why not? I'm pushing it towards the end here. I do like this portion because we're getting the vocal effects and such, and it's layering on top of all that, and we're getting Brain back on the hi-hat after the ride, and Larry doing his thing, and then he gives us this little thing. That sounds great.
I love that part.
Just a little side trip to Lure Man. Very melodic.
Yeah, I can totally hear the Floyd connection that you guys were making. But, you know, the great thing about this track is that, unlike Resting Bones, which just goes on and on, this one does have, you know, variation and details to pick up on. So I think it's a really fun track to listen to.
Well, you guys have to also take into consideration that Les is aware that Brain did Praxis with Bill Laswell.
Right.
Who's the dub master, right?
Right, yeah.
It's... To me, what I'm hearing, obviously I don't remember when we did this song. Like I was surprised when I heard it again, but I love the fact that it's got that dub feel to it, you know? Like layers of stuff that are happening behind the beat, and the bass just kind of moves along with the beat, you know? And it's could easily be that Les was trying to like channel the dub thing with Bill Laswell, you know?
Right.
The Brain. Obviously, Brain made that beat up on the spot. You know, that was not something that was like, play a beat, and he started playing that, and then the song came out.
What this track also does is reveals that these guys can write really nice, pretty melodic songs if they want to. But most of the time, they don't want to. And that's fine.
You know, I mean, it's that whole quagmire of, do you write pop songs or do you just play music, you know?
Right.
And if you're on Interscope and you're in... chugging along, you have to adhere to certain factors of it. Primus was able to always skirt around that machine and do what they wanted because they sold enough records that nobody could really say they were kicking off the label, you know? They succeeded, you know, in doing what they wanted to do, how they wanted to do it, you know.
Right on.
And that's what Primus is always been about, you know. I mean, they never wrote a song with a dude that was adhered to what's going to be on the radio, you know.
Right.
Stuff happened to land on the radio because it was so fucking awesome, you know.
Well, with that in mind, Soya, you'll never guess. I have a cover.
No way. Of this song?
Of this song.
God damn.
We got every single one except for Camelback Cinema, and even that one posted after we recorded that episode. So the Brown album has been covered by the internet, and if I can make that playlist and get it published, I will make negative amounts of money, and it'll be wonderful.
Man.
But
I want to hear this. Let's hear it, dude.
Okay, so this is on YouTube. You can just search for Primus Arnie cover.
Is it the Cheese Dippers?
The Cheese Dippers, man. Those guys might be making money selling tickets now. The way we pump them.
I know those Cheese Dippers, man. They better get back together. This is looks like it's by a guy named, and I'm probably going to get it wrong, but it looks like it's by a guy named Giaguaros. He actually says this is a silly experiment. I apologize for my ineptitude. I have not studied the parts thoroughly, and the spoken part is my free translation into Italian of the original text. So there you go. Only listen to it once, and I can tell you that the mix is all kinds of goofy. So here's a portion of a cover. One guy, all three parts, four parts if you count the vocals, Arnie. Not too bad.
The drums are roped in, which is cool, which is what I was talking about earlier. Like, if Brain would have been roped in sonically on that tune, it might have been something more spectacular to fuck with, you know?
Yeah.
Dub-wise.
This guy's, he's holding it down. He's doing pretty good. So, not too bad there, pal. And so we've covered the Brown album. I can't freaking believe it. That's a great one. I have an 1897 connection for this one, too. Frankie,
go ahead.
You're going to follow up. But this was a total shot in the dark because the lyrics include this guy lighting himself on fire. And when I think of somebody lighting themselves on fire, I always think of the Buddhist monk in Vietnam who lit himself on fire in public.
Committed suicide, actually.
Right. Self-immolation, killed himself as a protest for the government's mistreatment of just about everybody by that point.
That's on the cover of the Rage Against the Machine record, right?
And it made the cover of the first Rage record, which is probably where I first saw that image. And I remember that really well, actually, because when you folded out the CD booklet, then you got more of the image, if I recall correctly. So I looked up the name of this person, and I'm going to have Wikipedia play his name. And this person who was photographed setting himself on fire in protest was born in 1897 and of course died in 1963, and everybody saw that picture just shocked that he was born in 1897. So there you go.
And his grandma's name was Arnie.
I think that's also the connection. Yes, grandma, right. Arnie. It's kind of a downer on that one, but this guy, you know, he did something important and really helped, you know, really helped make people understand what was going on in Vietnam in those years in the 60s, and whew, it was rough. Frankie, please bring our spirits up with your connection.
All right, Josh, let me tell you about my favorite film of all time. This film is barely 16 minutes long, and it's considered one of the first pieces of surrealist filmmaking in history. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. Nope, that's featured. No, I don't know.
Wizard of Oz. No.
No. And the Lucian Dog by Luis Buñuel and Salvador Dalí. 1929. Okay. Famous for the scene where Buñuel cuts a woman's eye with a razor blade.
Wow.
You know, the main actress in this film was Simone Marie Wu. And the reason that Arnie is connected to this film to some degree for me, is because after the Second World War, Simone fell into a deep depression and she committed suicide by dousing herself in gasoline and setting herself on fire in a public square.
Oh, man. Just like Arnie.
Just like Arnie.
Who is her grandpa. So
right on.
it's all coming together here. Oh, my goodness. Gee whiz. Whew. Blah. Sorry, Soya. You look sad now.
Dude, I'm taking it all in, man. This is amazing.
You've been on tour for 4 days.
Bring up such fun topics.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Funny, sometimes deep and dark. This is a dark one.
Well, the good news is that's the end of the 1897 connections. No more. Everything is sunshine and rainbows from here on out.
Man, oh, man. Bring on the Jerry Reed songs is all I want to know.
There you go. Well, I can say this. Let's throw a blanket over Arnie because he's been tracked. We have completed the Brown album. Soya, thank you so much for your insight and joining us for the Brown album tracks.
Had a lot of great guests on this record. It was fun.
You were number one, my friend. And we get to go on a bit of an inter-album hiatus. You are going to hear some fantastic interviews coming up over the next 5-6 weeks.
We don't want to blow your mind just yet.
Yes, these names are going to blow your mind. So stay tuned for those. Final thoughts on the Brown album, gentlemen. Putting it all together. For me, this is one that had to grow on me, and it finally did grow on me. And I was always dogged by some of the reviews I read that were middling to negative, and I let them color my thinking on this album for so long, but I finally come around to appreciate it for what it is. They went for something, and they achieved it, and you can't take that away from them. And generally, I like it. So that's where I am with it. I've made my peace. It's really easy to get mad at other people's approach to art, but why bother? So, Brown album, you're all right with me.
Brown album, all right. I actually enjoyed this album from the get-go since the first time that I heard it. You know, it stood out for me, not only as pretty unique within the Primus catalog because of its sound, its structure, but also pretty unique in general. I don't think there is another single album in the entire world that sounds like the Brown album in terms of production values. It also has an aesthetic, you know, which is pretty prevalent throughout the lyrics, the themes, the characters, you know, the songs themselves. I think it's a really impressive piece of conceptual art. The lyrics are really strong in some of these tracks, perhaps, you know, some of Les's best lyrics. And what is strange about the Brown album is that with other Primus albums, you know, maybe I pick and choose some tracks to make playlists, but the Brown album is just something that, you know, if I'm going to listen to more than two tracks, I prefer to listen to the Brown album back to back because there are just, you know, so many songs there that work together as a cohesive piece, you know, more than standalone tracks. The tour was also absolutely amazing. And I also want to thank Soya for shedding light on all of these songs, you know, clearing up so many mysteries and sharing his amazing insight about being there when this legendary piece of music was recorded.
Amazing, Frankie. Thank you. I will close this one out by saying, you know, it really was a ride to be there. And, you know, Tim left and Brain came in and they created this thing. And we went for that weird approach that Les's vision was of the sonic quality, not quality, but the sonic aspect of what you're getting, you know, it was to try to be different. And it really, it's amazing how to this day, Primus fans love this record, you know? I'm perplexed by that, you know, because I feel like this record was a point where they were at a low and they really had to find something new to come out with, you know, with Brain. And I think they did a good job at that, you know? The recording techniques were very funny and unique, I keep saying, but... but, you know, I mean, it is what it is, you know? I mean, we did what we did and you put it out, you know? I think it's great. And the tour was great. You know, we had a really fun time, you know, with all the guys and pushing this thing live. The fans didn't like it at the moment because it wasn't Winona's Big Brown Beaver over again, you know?
Right.
And it took 10, 15 years for fans to go, wait a second, that's actually pretty cool, you know, what they did at that moment. I don't know if I could say Brown Album for Life, but I will. Brown Album for Life.
There you go, Brown Album for Life. It has its staunch defenders, and there are people that will die on that hill. Whew.
Amazing, man. It's yeah. Amazing what these guys went through at that period, you know? Like, you have to realize the success of Primus. And to have Tim quit and then have to get a new drummer, even though he was an old buddy that, you know, right. They knew really well. They had to reinvent themselves, you know? And this was that stepping stone of the next Primus, you know, without Tim.
Indeed. We've seen, of course, all the steps that proceeded throughout the 90s and into the 2000s. So we're going to get there next. So hold on to your hats, folks. Lots of interviews. We're going to talk about life on the Brown Tour with Soya and a couple other guys. We're going to get into rhinoplasty, and then we're going to set sail for Antipop. So,
can't wait for Rhino.
Get your noses ready. Later days.
Remember this day.
Vive la France, vive la France.